Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where each week we share an idea in the Parsha and how it relates to Jewish history, along with all the books and articles I've read over Shabbos to learn more about it. Just a reminder to sign up for our weekly email that you can get at readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com, where you'll get a write-up of our weekly class, along with all the links to the articles and books that I have discovered on my Shabbos reading journeys. Thank you so much to our sponsors and friends, Janet and Lior Hoden family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. I can type fluently in Hebrew. I can read nearly fluently in Hebrew, especially with academic Hebrew. It gets tricky because a lot of the words are really just English with Hebrew characters, but I really don't speak a word of Hebrew. Maybe I'm just embarrassed by my awful American pronunciation, but even when I'm in Israel, I have a very hard time speaking the language. It's not something I am proud of. Growing up in New York, high school students must all take the Regents. It's the statewide exam, and nearly all Jewish high school students I know take the Hebrew Regents as their language requirement. I did not go to an elementary school, though I love my elementary school. It's not one that taught Ivrit be'Ivrit. Those are classes that use instructional Hebrew. So I was quite terrified for my ninth grade Hebrew Regent. I still managed to get a 99 on the exam. Hold your applause. But I got stuck on one word during the oral conversational part of the exam. There's like a written part, and then there's an oral conversation. In that conversation with our Hebrew teacher, the great Rabbi Dr. Joseph Ozarowski, still around, the wonderful teacher, I was supposed to ask him. You get like a scenario. He hands you a card and you get like a scenario. And I was supposed to ask him, according to this scenario, for a replacement train ticket. I still remember this, except I forgot the Hebrew word for ticket. So I was just like kind of motioning with my hands. He saw I didn't get it. He says, he eventually, not even going to speak Hebrew on this. I don't want to embarrass myself, but he eventually, you know, kind of prodded me and told me the word that I was looking for, kartis, which means ticket. Hence, I got a 99 instead of 100, and I obviously will never forget my kartis again. But aside from the obvious social purposes allowing us to converse with our brothers and sisters in Israel, is there a religious value in learning how to speak Hebrew? In the words of Shema that appear in our parsha, Rashi makes a fascinating comment. It says, "Vilimartam osamets b'neichem l'daber bam b'shivtcha b'veisecha v'lechtcha v'aderchu v'shachvcha v'kumecha." Psukim of Shema in the 11th chapter in our parsha, and Rashi writes, "L'daber bam." Rashi writes, "Misha shehaben yodei l'daber." Right when a child learns to speak, "Lamdehu Torah tzivalanu Moshe." You should teach him the words that Moshe received the Torah, commanded us to follow the Torah. This is based on a Gemara in Sukkah. Sheyehei ze Limud Diburo, that this is a way that you have to teach them how to speak. Mikan Amru, says Rashi, Kishahatinok Matchil Odaber, when a child learns to speak, Aviv Mesiachimo Belashan Akodesh Melando Torah, a parent, a father, should speak with them in Hebrew and teach them Torah. Imlo Asachein Hare Hu Kiilu Kovro. It's like you bury the child, God forbid. So based on the language of the verse, you should teach your children to speak in it. Ladaber Bum, Rashi states that a father should specifically speak Hebrew to their young children. Is it in fact a mitzvah to learn how to speak the Hebrew language? And if it is, why isn't this codified in any halachic works? This is not cited in Shulchan Aruch. To understand the significance of the Hebrew language, let's explore the incredible modern-day story of the revival of Hebrew. Reports of the demise of Hebrew have been greatly exaggerated. Some refer to the revival of Hebrew as if the language somehow died. It was never dead. Our prayers, the Mishnah, as well as Rambam's celebrated Mishnah Torah, are all written in a crisp Hebrew. Hebrew as a spoken language, however, rapidly fell into disuse following the destruction of the Second Temple. Instead, Jews began using language colloquially that relied on Hebrew characters, the alephbeis, but it was not Hebrew. It was languages such as Aramaic, Ladino, and of course Yiddish. After nearly 2,000 years of disuse, how did Hebrew become the language of the state of Israel? Lewis Gilbert has a fabulous book called The Story of Hebrew, which tells this fascinating story. Much of the Hebrew comeback is owed to the Jewish Enlightenment writers who championed the use of the Hebrew language. Undoubtedly influenced by more traditional Hebrew authors that were predated them by nearly 100 years, most notably the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, who we've discussed before, we discussed him last week, as well as an emergent European nationalistic zeitgeist. It's a fancy term. I made that up myself. I'm going to repeat that again because I'm so impressed with this sentence that I wrote. An emergent emergent European nationalistic zeitgeist. Like, people were very into national pride that placed renewed emphasis on language as an expression of national identity. A movement emerged known as Techiya, meaning revival, which was committed to reintroducing the language of Hebrew to Jewish intelligentsia. As Gilbert writes, the Techiya was a revolt against both assimilation and traditional religiosity. Its proponents rejected Haskalah for its lack of commitment to Jewish nationhood and its belief in the potential benignity of Gentile governments. That's a benignity. I've never seen that word that way. I love it. They wished to create a culture that was modern, European, and secular, yet at the same time authentically Jewish. Among the movement's great luminaries were the Zionist theoretician Achad Ha'am, the poets Judah Leib Gordon and Chaim Nachman Bialik, and the lexiconographer Eliezer ben Yehuda, of whom we will talk a great deal about right now. No one was quite as committed to reviving Hebrew as a spoken language, quite like Eliezer ben Yehuda, who dedicated a fanatical zeal to ensure our spoken ancestral language would return to the Jewish people. In 1880, ben Yehuda wrote an article for Hamagid under his pen name, Eliezer ben Yehuda. His real name was Eliezer Yitzchak Perlman. He wrote, "Will our language and literature last much longer if we do not revive it, if we do not make it a spoken language? And how can that work other than by making Hebrew the instructional medium of our schools? Not in Europe nor in any of the lands of our exile, where we are an insignificant minority and no amount of teaching effort is going to succeed, but in our land, the land of Israel." Not everyone within the Zionist movement was on board with the effort to reintroduce the language of Hebrew. Herzl did not speak a lick of Hebrew and was skeptical of the entire effort. "We cannot converse with one another in Hebrew," Herzl said. "Who among us has a sufficient acquaintance with Hebrew to ask even for a railway ticket in that language?" As someone who personally got a point off on his Hebrew region for exactly that word, a train ticket, a kartis, I find great comfort and solidarity in Herzl's skepticism. "Such a thing cannot be done," Herzl concluded. Instead, he advocated for German to be the language of the land of Israel. Imagine that. Ben Yehuda, however, was not deterred. A year after his public call for the revival of spoken Hebrew, he set sail for the land of Israel, along with his wife, Devorah. The following year, in 1882, they were already living in Israel, they welcomed their first child, Ben Zion, and committed to only speak Hebrew to the young child. People thought they were crazy. Spoiler alert, they were kind of crazy. Specifically, Eliezer Ben Yehuda was definitely crazy for this one. Not least of whom was his very wife, Devorah, Ben Yehuda, who found her husband's fanatical commitment to Hebrew somewhat oppressive. If she had the chance, she admitted she would have returned to Europe to escape the hardships of life in Israel. She eventually passed away. Eliezer Ben Yehuda married her little sister, I believe, who actually played a major role in developing the language of Hebrew, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Many others warned them that their insistence on speaking Hebrew would have severely negative effects on their child's development. In fact, by the age of 3, Ben Zion Ben Yehuda had still not spoken a word. One evening, Eliezer Ben Yehuda overheard his spouse, Devorah, singing a Russian lullaby. She was breaking the rules. She was not speaking only Hebrew. To their young child, he was infuriated. As he was yelling at his wife, his frightened child called out the first words organically spoken in Hebrew in 2 millennia. "Abba, Abba," called out, using the word for his father. It's a very moving story. It's actually, Lewis Gilbert cites it in his book, The Story of Hebrew, and he heard that story from Herzl's last surviving daughter. It's a fascinating story, and it's so moving. After 2,000 years of Hebrew not being a spoken language, the first words that were spoken were "father, father, Abba, Abba." Despite the opposition, Ben Yehuda's position eventually won. His version of Hebrew, however, was not quite as successful. Many new words needed to be invented or designed, what's called a neologism, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, that's a new word, in order to properly describe the modern world. Some of these words still persist today, such as milon for dictionary, that's a good one, and buba for doll. I never heard that, but I think that I checked on Google Translate. Is that how they say doll in Hebrew? It's a buba. Other words caused controversy. The word for tomatoes, agvaniot, was considered scandalous since the word, which was coined by Yechiel, Michal, Pines, was derived from the term agavim, meaning lust. In the traditional Orthodox community, there were graver concerns about transforming Hebrew into a nationally spoken language, normally reserved for prayer and words of holiness. How could Lashon HaKodesh, our holy language, be used for common everyday speech? I believe in the Sefer Hasidim, it quotes from the Ravid. I don't even have this in my email, but there were people who were careful not to even teach the Aleph Beis to non-Jews, and there were people who were careful not to speak Lashon HaKodesh in the bathroom. So how could this become the language that everybody speaks in the land of Israel? I remember hearing in the name of Rav Moshe Shapiro an objection to the modern Israeli word used for chalkboard, meaning a luach, which derives from luchot, like the tablets, and that obviously associated with the commandments brought down by Moshe. They've taken the most essential, indelible part of Judaism and they made it erasable. Perhaps the most vocal critic of the adoption of modern spoken Hebrew was, of course, the Satmar Rebbe Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, a fierce critic of Zionism in general. The third and final section of his anti-Zionist work, Vayoel Moshe, a fascinating work, but one where he talks about not settling the land of Israel. And the last final section is called Maimer Lashon HaKodesh, an essay on speaking Hebrew. And the Satmar of cautions about the adoption of Hebrew as a modern spoken language. The essay was originally written in response to a letter from Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, the great Rav of Montreal, I believe, who most people, at least in our community, in my community, in the Yeshiva University community, know him because he is the one rabbi who Rev Herschel Schachter always turns to for approbations on his works. You can ask Rabbi Schachter, why is Rev Pinchas Hirschsprung always the person you turn to give you haskamos, approbations on your svarim? He always has an interesting answer and a story with it. So Rav Hirschsprung inquired from the Satmar Rav whether young women should be taught Hebrew in school. His answer, the Satmar Rav's answer, which forms the basis of this published essay, Maimar Lashon HaKodesh, was an emphatic no. Do I have the original letter that was written from the Satmar Rav to Rav Hirschsprung in the email? You better believe I do. But you got to sign up for our weekly email, Reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. Eliezer ben Yehuda courted controversy in his own lifetime from the traditional Jewish community when he advocated that farmers trying to keep Shemitah no longer relied on the Chalukah charitable system. Later known as the Shemitah Affair, in a series of articles in his newspaper known as Hatzvi, that was the newspaper that Eliezer ben Yehuda founded. They're all journalists. His son Ben Zion also became a journalist and an editor, though his son Ben Zion, the one who cried out Abba Abba, changed his last name from Ben Yehuda to Ben Avi, and I think he became known as Ben Zion Ben Avi, the son of my father. So in Hatzvi, which he founded in 1884, right, this is all quick succession, the first article he wrote about Hebrew was, I believe, in 1880. He set sail to Israel in 1881. He has a child in 1882, I think I said. And now we're in 1884. This is 3 years later. There's so much happening. He dismissed the need to keep Shemitah. Building the land of Israel was more important in the eyes of Eliezer ben Yehuda. We've spoken about Shemitah in the past. This began a long sense of enmity between ben Yehuda and the traditional community in Israel, many of whom to this day insist on only speaking Yiddish in conversation and not using Lashon HaKodesh, the Hebrew language. Through his newspaper article, however, Ben Yehuda was quite successful in spreading the Hebrew language in the land of Israel. In each edition of the paper, he would publish new Hebrew words for the public to slowly develop a modern Hebrew vocabulary. Of course, the success of Hebrew was not a product of one man. Most of the words he coined have fallen into disuse. The State of Israel established a committee known as the Vad HaLashon, the Academy of the Hebrew Language, which still functions today, that continually updates modern Hebrew to reflect contemporary societal developments. Some of their things are very backwards and people don't even call it that. Like, I think in Hebrew, I may be getting this backwards, a front axle of a car is called according to the official Hebrew language, which I remember my Chavrusin Shalavim, Yair Sladowski, who actually made Aliyah, is a wonderful person. We used to learn a little bit together in Shalavim, and he pointed this out to me, that a front axle in official Hebrew is called a back axle kidmi, which is basically a front back axle, which is basically a front axle, because they call the back axle, they just use American English for it, well, like a lot of words in Hebrew. And of course, if you sign up for our weekly email, I have one of those articles where Ben Yehuda is introducing new words to the public in Israel, It's really fascinating to read. It's a bit long. I'm not going to read it now. Hebrew became the window through which many assimilated Jews reclaimed their Jewish identity. Franz Kafka, the acclaimed writer, hired a Hebrew tutor named Yuri Langer. Yuri Langer would need his whole separate email. He's probably one of the most fascinating Jews to ever live. He was a chassid. I think he was a chassid of the Belzer Rebbe. This is over 100 years ago. He came out of the closet. He was a homosexual, and he published on poetry and mysticism. Really fascinating person. And this is the person who Franz Kafka hired to teach him Hebrew. Kafka spent 7 years learning the language and became somewhat proficient in Hebrew, a fact only revealed years later after Kafka's Hebrew notebooks were finally discovered in the estate of Max Brut, which has its own crazy story. Not for today's class, but it's a wild story. Lawsuits involved. How did Franz Kafka's writing eventually find its way to the state of Israel? There's an amazing book on it. I love talking about this because I love Kafka, but now's not the time. Let's keep talking about Hebrew. Speaking Hebrew became a symbol of authentic Jewish identity. As Natan Sharansky recalled during his time as a Russian refusnik, "I still remember the very first sentence we learned from our teacher." It like pains me when I read this. What was the first sentence he learned from his teacher? "Anachnu Yehudim, aval anachnu lo medabrim Ivrit." We are Jews, but we do not speak Hebrew. Once the state of Israel was established, Hebrew flourished even more. Efforts were made, sometimes to the frustration of newly arrived immigrants, to only speak Hebrew in Israel. One flyer that was disseminated cautioned bus drivers only to speak to passengers exclusively in Hebrew. If they heard passengers speaking another language, the flyer said they were told to correct them. Traditional Jews were not the only ones to express concerns about the adoption of Hebrew as the spoken vernacular in Israel. In a 1926 letter to Franz Rosenzweig, Gershom Scholem, the famed scholar of Jewish mysticism, wrote about his concerns about building a modern society on the foundation of an ancient and religiously mystical language. Scholem wrote, "The letter is so fascinating, I'm going to quote it in full. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I will quote a big chunk of it. If you want to read the whole thing, you have to sign up for our weekly email." You know what it is, reading Jewish history in the parsha.substack.com. This is what Scholem writes to Franz Rosenzweig in 1926. "This country is a volcano. It harbors the language. One speaks here of many matters that make us fail. More than anything else, we are concerned today about the Arab. But much more sinister than the Arab problem is another threat, a threat which the Zionist enterprise unavoidably has had to face, the actualization of Hebrew." And this entire letter, and it's a long letter, I'm not going to read it all now. You can sign up for the weekly email. But Scholem basically has this concern that there are so many components of Hebrew that have mystical significance, you will never be able to secularize this language, and that mystical significance is going to bubble up and eventually explode. I'll just read a little bit more from the very end of the letter. "The moment when the power stored in the language unfolds again, when the spoken word, the reality of our language, gets form and reality again, that moment will place this holy tradition as a decisive token before our people. God will not remain silent in the language in which he has affirmed our life 1,000 times and more. This unavoidable revolution of the language in which his," meaning God's, "voice will be heard again is not the only issue that is not spoken about today in this country. Those who called the Hebrew language back to life did not believe in this trial, yet they created it. May it not come to pass that the imprudence which has led us on this apocalyptic road ends in ruin." Signed, "In Jerusalem, the seventh day of Teves, 5687, that was 1926. I think what he is getting at is like biblical words like chashmal, which originally features in the vision of Yecheskel, the Maisa Merkava, is now used in modern Hebrew, becomes electricity. Merkava, that word, the holy divine chariot, becomes the word for a tank, a military tank. Scholem's concerns get to the heart of the very project of Zionism and the state of Israel. Has the holy been secularized, or has the secularized become holy? That remains ultimately in the hands of the Jewish people. As we continue to pray in the words of Rav Kook, Hayashan Yischadesh veHachadash Yischadesh, that the old should be renewed and the new should become holy." And that brings us back to our Parsha. The land of Israel in our Parsha is described as Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Osa, All of the commentators are puzzled. Why specifically is the land of Israel described this way? Can't be God be found anywhere? It's only Israel that God seeks. The word Doresh does not only mean seek, it can also mean to darshan, to interpret and find meaning. And specifically in the land of Israel, does God look into the hearts of the Jewish people? And even those Jews whose, according to the plain meaning, the pshat, so to speak, may not be fully observant of Torah and mitzvahs, but God, so to speak, darshans the Jewish people in Israel. It is only in Israel where our underlying Jewish identity is fully activated, and even those who may seem distant or even secular, their underlying Jewish connection shines through. God darshans us in Israel. And this explains why specifically in our parsha are we told about the mitzvah to speak Hebrew. As mentioned, this halacha is not codified in Shulchan Aruch, though the holiness of the language is of course discussed in many, many sources. But to speak colloquially with a holy language can only be accomplished in the land of Israel, where the Jewish people themselves are all explicitly dedicated in one way or another to rebuild the eternal nation that is the Jewish people. Only in Israel can even ordinary conversations assume religious meaning. That is why, as Rev Baruch Halevi Epstein suggests in his Torah Temima, it may be that only in Eretz Yisrael is there a mitzvah to speak Hebrew. That explains why it was not codified in the Shulchan Aruch, because this is a mitzvah that only applies when we have settled and have sovereignty in the land of Israel. That is the suggestion of Rev Baruch Epstein in Torah Temima, which of course we link to. The Jewish people are the text of the land of Israel, and even our mundane conversations are the subject of God's drushos. Hebrew is the language that preserves the underlying holiness of our ordinary conversations in the land of Israel. So thank you again for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. To get all the links to the articles and books mentioned, be sure to subscribe to our weekly Substack, Reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. Thank you again to our dearest friends and sponsors, Janet and Lior Hodan family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. Thank you so much for listening, and keep reading each and every Shabbos.